I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight.
Welcome, everyone, to Street and Curb. We are the Street and Curb Radio Network. And yes, that is the Elton John song, Rocket Man. And this is in commemoration of the drone Euphoria, Pandemonium, End of Days, Figment of Imagination, wherever you want to be. However, I probably should have saved this song when we talk about Elon Musk, because he's probably more the Rocket Man than the drones are. So I want to welcome everyone. Our radio network is expanding. We're all the way in Huntsville, all the way to North Jersey, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Florida. Just a little bit of a housekeeping before we move on. In Huntsville, starting in January, our show is moving to Sundays at 7 a.m. And we have an additional show on Saturdays at 6 a.m. So what does that mean for you in Alabama? You have to get up early to smell the coffee. We are also expanding into North Jersey and Jackson, Mississippi in early 2025. And hopefully we'll keep expanding our network and our reach for Street and Curb. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about drones. We're going to talk about misinformation. We're going to talk about influencers. We have a full schedule today, so we'll be right back.
Paul Oster, certified FICO Pro, the nation's credit repair man and the president of Better Qualified. 20 years of helping thousands of people just like you repair their credit. We have an A rating with the Better Business Bureau, and our clients have saved thousands of dollars with lower interest rates. We're currently helping people in your area, so take the first step. We have helped our clients to have hundreds of thousands of late payments, collections, and charge-offs deleted from their credit reports. Are you tired of getting denied? Tired of higher interest rates? This is your message. You can own a home. You can get out of debt. You can afford that new car. 20 years later, you have my word. If you're ready to help yourself, I know we will help you, and I'll guarantee it. Text the message CURB to the number 40691. Again, text the message CURB to the number 40691 for your free consultation and credit analysis.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your designated driver, Steve Carvelli. Forgot to mention that in the opening, but I'm still your designated driver. We're going to talk about drones. And, you know, it's funny that actually I'm in Florida and I happened to see a drone last night at around 1 a.m. over Sarasota, Tampa area. So I guess the drones are now becoming endemic to the United States, not just the state of New Jersey. But depending on the day, the media source you listen to or the state you are in, the drones have a revolving storyline. So I've come up with 8 possibilities on what the drones are. Number one, could they be aliens? Well, if they're aliens, they either have to be friendly or not friendly. If they're not friendly, that could be a problem for our Christmas season in here right now. But aliens are a possibility. But, you know, we have the 2 subsections of them. Number 2, it's a foreign actor. Again, we go back to the friendly, non-friendly. If it's non-friendly, again, we have an issue like non-friendly aliens. If they're friendly, we have to wonder why they are spying on us in the first place. You know, number 3, is it airplanes? Well, of course, they would all be friendly, and that's a situation in itself. Number 4, illegal operators. There could be people who do not have the right permits or the right licenses to fly these drones at these hours, but these are big drones, and these are large drones that seem to have a lot of technology into them. So if they're illegal operators, I think we have to look into the fact that they're probably non-friendly. Another possibility, and this is something I have actually read about a little bit recently, is a startup company looking to prove the concept of a drone or a certain type of drone that they have established. That's an interesting idea. Could a startup really, trying to use proof of concept, get the drones in the air on a large basis to see what kind of response they would get? And that's a possibility. Number 7, government or military. Now, I'm making the assumption that it is our government or our military. So is it a friendly purpose or a non-friendly purpose? If it's a government friendly purpose, they're basically doing what the startup's doing and doing proof of concept. If it's a non-friendly purpose, there's been a question out there, and some pundits have used this, that they're looking for something. And apparently, the story is that there was some radioactive material missing somewhere. And actually, the drones are a military drone looking for the radioactive product that is supposedly missing. So again, the question is, if it's non-friendly, what are they looking for? So it's everywhere. And number eight, the last possibility is that this is a figment of imagination. It's hard to believe that that could be possibly a mass hysteria or a mass imaginatory belief. But again, we put it out there as number eight. That's why we put that on the bottom of the list. Or the possibility of the secret number nine is that it's a combination of all of them, depending on the state. Now, everyone seems to have an opinion on what these drones are. The fact that the government is speaking about it sometimes, not speaking about it sometimes. Actually, Biden just came out and said something about it. Is it possibly that the bigger problem and the bigger issue that I want to talk about today is the social media and how they have viewed the drone issue in the first place? Social media has been ripe recently with the conspiracy. The government is hiding something. They can't believe on the people who speak. Mayorkas has come out and stated something about the drones, and social media is quick to point out that we shouldn't believe a word he says because of the border issue. So you can't believe what the government is saying, apparently. The number two aspect is an espionage plot, a foreign or alien. One of the plots that I've heard about this has been that this is just basically a feint from a foreign actor to divert our attention to the drones, and a bigger issue or a bigger attack is coming somewhere down the line. So again, it goes all the way back that I'm more fascinated with the social media and the social response to the drones, whether they actually exist, real and apparent threat or not apparent threat. It's the social media that may be a bigger threat than the actual drones. So this goes into the discussion of a line between information and misinformation. Misinformation really became popular or became identified during the pandemic. And misinformation is apparently needs to be regulated and needs to be defined. But apparently during the pandemic, we had a big issue with misinformation because the current government, Joe Biden's administration, wanted to regulate misinformation in regards to COVID, the pandemic, vaccines, and so forth. So I want to go over what the definition is of information, misinformation, or wrong information. Information, by a de facto definition, is factual or able to be proven to exist. Misinformation is just not non-factual and wrong information, but it's deliberately distributed for an ulterior motive. And this is where the rub really gets me. Since some information is just bad information, in other words, it's just proven wrong. So whether we misheard something, misperceived something, or misunderstood something, it's just proven to be incorrect. And at some point, bad information is just bad information. We have to rely on the scientific process to create models and paradigms that are routinely replaced, corrected, or create other models or paradigms that are deemed to be true or factual at that time. Listen, for many years, the Earth was flat. The information back then that the Earth was flat. Now that we're in a round world and science has proven that the Earth is not flat, the flat Earth theory is considered wrong. It's not considered misinformation, it's considered bad information. So again, scientific testing always changes the parameters of what is considered true information and not true information. So when back in the day, when some people thought that the Earth was flat, were they criticized as being purveyors of non-information or misinformation? No, they were not. They were the culture of the day, and that was the thought of the day. Now, perhaps if you consider back in the witch trials and the Inquisition, that people who had the wrong beliefs were actually burned at the stake. People felt that there was an ulterior motive to these people, that they were going to corrupt the God-fearing people that they were, or were going to have allow the devil or evil to have a foothold in their lives. But the question I pose is this: when and how does wrong or disproven information transform into the nefarious misinformation? Who makes this decision? Is it the government? Is it the party in power? Is it the majority viewpoint? Is it social media influences? Is it the vocal minority? And, you know, you have to remember that the government back in the pandemic wanted to create this agency or quasi-government bureaucratic agency that was going to decide what was true and what was deemed information and what was deemed not information. And apparently that misinformation, because it has an ulterior motive behind pushing misinformation, seems to be a big issue with people in power. It seems to be a big issue with people who influence people, that they want to be able to control that. And I guess my question to the audience and my question to the viewers of Street and Curb is that misinformation is basically a artificial construct of how we view things, that because of an ulterior motive and intention. It is not a real construct. Basically, misinformation is information that is disproven. And we have to rely on our scientific ability, our logical ability, and our ability to make decisions whether we believe something or not. You know, the Easter Bunny. You know, when you were young, you believed in the Easter Bunny. Now, is that misinformation that it is considered false at this point? I don't think so, because that was the ulterior motive of the Easter Bunny was, you know, to make kids happy. So again, the issue that we have here is that a lot of information has been proven wrong. It is not necessarily misinformation. And the boundaries that we have made between these issues, between whether they're factual or non-factual, whether it's misinformation, whether it's nefarious as misinformation, are pretty much artificial constructs by our government, by our influencers, by people in power. And it's something that we as Americans and we as just common sense thinkers have to work through the processes to see what is true and not true. We're going to take a quick break. We have a lot more to talk about on the information, misinformation front. And of course, I want to talk a lot about influencers. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your designated driver, Steve Carvelli, and welcome to our radio network, which spans all the way from Alabama to North Jersey, from North Carolina to Florida. We are everywhere, and we're getting bigger every week. So we're talking a little bit about the misappropriation of, I don't want to say that, but a hijacking of our moral compass in regards to the shooting of the CEO. You know, this is something that I really saw beginning in the pandemic, when we had a lot of the riots over the issues of racial equality and so forth. And a lot of the district attorneys and a lot of the cities that had a lot of the rioting did not pursue the legal consequences and charging of the people who did the rioting. So apparently the view was that the people who did the rioting were there for a just cause and for a bigger cause, and the bigger cause trumps the persecution of the actions that they took. You know, I guess, you know, it's a situation that how you view in the context of things, what is legal, what is not legal, and what is considered a permitted or permissive actions, and if they are justified by a higher good. You know, during the French Revolution, they guillotined people, they killed people. Revolutions do that because of the higher good is for the people. And then a new norm sets in and a new legal system sets in. But this is something that I think has really become endemic to this country because Department of Justice and district attorneys in a lot of these cities just refused to prosecute, didn't want to prosecute because they thought that these actions were justified. And this, I think, is wrong. These people were supposedly acting for a higher cause, but any repercussions for any current actions just melted away because this higher cause was just assumed to be correct, justified, and legal. This apparent erosion of our legal boundaries has resulted in a fuzzy border that seems to be exploited every day by actors in our society. You know, these guardrails need to be replaced. America's youth has kind of run off the road a little bit, and this is why they view, they deem this action by this charged murderer of the CEO as being acceptable. It is not acceptable when killing someone is illegal. And no way can it be considered acceptable. There may be mitigating factors, there may be just cause that you're trying to work for, but it is still under the norms of the day, under the norms of the law of the day, it is considered a legal action, and a legal action should not be promoted. It should not be allowed, endorsed. It should not be elevated in any level. So the idea that a CEO of one healthcare company symbolizes what is wrong with the healthcare in the United States, it's not only misplaced, but also damaging to any meaningful dialogue about healthcare we should be having. Yes, we should be having discussions on healthcare. We should be having discussions on how it seems to be unfair and how it seems to be costly and how people who need healthcare are being denied coverage. That is a legitimate and acceptable dialogue that we should be having. But to have this linked to the murder of a CEO of one company who probably is not capable of affecting any change or doesn't represent position to be able to affect meaningful change in the industry is totally misplaced. But somehow we're perpetuating this myth, we're perpetuating this narrative, and it's still getting traction, especially in the younger demographic today. Look, I have to believe that actions have consequences and illegal actions have more appropriate and more severe consequences that we as a society have to maintain. But, you know, it goes back to the point of the 18 to 29 demographic in this country. And this is something that I want to shift to a little bit, and we're going to talk about this on a lot of shows coming forward, is the influencer space. You know, influencers are an interesting breed. It's an interesting name. It's an interesting title. And by definition, an influencer is someone who is considered influential to a certain group of people or following. They have to be able to guide and persuade the interests of others via social media. In other words, that their opinion is digitally weighted and it can affect the behavior of their social media followers. Wow, with this much power and influence, why aren't they tackling the bigger issues of society? Poverty, hunger, you know, curing cancer, repression, whatever it may be. But instead, they're promoting clothing brands. They're promoting restaurants. They're promoting services. They're promoting political viewpoints. Now, celebrities always believe that they can influence because they are celebrities. I don't understand that. I think some of them, you know, we will listen to what they say. But celebrities are just that. They're just, you know, constructs of Hollywood. They're movie actors, you know, but apparently they endorse everything from product services, even political candidates. But I'm just fascinated by the concept of an influencer. You know, if you're in stage and screen, does that equate to marketing success? Perhaps, but perhaps not. Perhaps it's just a name recognition that influencers want. But most influencers today are not celebrities. They are individuals. A lot of them models, a lot of them digital content providers that equate themselves with being influential into their realm of followers. And I'm just really fascinated with this. I just don't understand that, you know, I have to say that if you're in your resume and you have the word influencer on there as a job, it's not a job. It's a digital presence with a lot of followers. And let's be frank about this. A lot of people who follow people, it's just basically a swipe. I don't know if you have any influence on these followers. I think people who are bored and go through the internet every day start liking people for the sake of liking them, and the counts of likes go up, and therefore they turn themselves an influencer when they reach a certain level. TikTok is one, you know, X is another, and there's a new one, Blueski, which is another platform that people use. But influencers themselves have, you know, undue influence, for lack of a better word, on society and in regards to a younger demographic. I'm amazed. I'm really flabbergasted at some of these influencers. It's almost like, you know, they somehow believe that their opinion counts more than yours and that they're somehow going to sway your opinion. A lot of this happened during the political sequence that we just had recently. You know, whether Taylor Swift endorses a candidate, whether Beyonce endorses a candidate, does that really sway you? Are you going to change your vote because Beyonce said, oh, vote for Kamala Harris, do not vote for Donald Trump? If you're swayed by a celebrity without any substance or reasoning behind that, just because they said so, then you are part of the masses that are probably part of the problem of the digital realm right now. I don't know how influential people are. And if they really, truly are influential, they should be doing something more with that influence. They should be, you know, telling people to, you know, support cancer curing mechanism, being able to volunteer in actions for feeding the hunger, you know, volunteering for, you know, providing services to the poor, doing pro bono services as legal services, whatever it may be. It should be doing an action that is for the greater good rather than purchasing in the consumer. Now, don't take me wrong. Ad agencies, marketing agencies, publicists do serve a function, but it is known a function. It's a function that is integral in the capitalist society. Influencers are, again, pushing themselves into a quasi-advertising marketing concept, but not necessarily using it as such, just because of the amount of followers. So when you have 100,000, 500,000, somehow you demand more money because you have more followers. Again, goes back to the younger demographic and where our moral compass is and how our moral compass has changed a little bit is because influencers and the ability to treat that as a real job and be able to think that we have oversized influence and oversized persuasion capabilities on our followers goes part of the myth of the digital realm. And you know, we're going to have a lot of discussions on this down the line. It's something that It kind of bothers me on a daily basis when I see that when something happens in the news, someone gets commented as an influencer, and the next thing next to their name is the amount of followers they have. And no one understands how they got the followers and how many were just, you know, arbitrary swipes, how many of these people just kind of went on the bandwagon, but it is, or how many of them are actually fake or artificial swipes or artificial followers or followers that are imaginary that can disappear next week. But again, it goes back, and then, you know, everything goes back. And during the pandemic, you know, everyone had the ability to sit on the internet, not be socially engaged except on the internet. And all this has really blown up to the point that we are right now. So again, you know, it goes back to, you know, the drones, the misinformation, influencers. It's all a toxic kind of mixture. And if we aren't able to segregate the important components of that and make our own minds up and make our own decisions and make our own capacity to learn from these issues, that we're going to be condemned to a digital kind of diaspora that, you know, really has no definition and no way of going forward. So hopefully in this show at Street and Curb, we find a way going forward and we kind of go through the messes and go through the common sense approach and come up with a path that we can all move forward. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to close our Street and Curb shortly here. So we take a quick break to our sponsors and, of course, frequent our sponsors because that's what keeps us on the air. And we'll be right back after this quick message.
All right.
Here we go in 5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm Steve Carbelli, your designated driver. And yes, we did go a little long today because I got on my soapbox and made it a bigger soapbox. So we're going to see you next week on Street and Curb. Remember, keep the wheels and the rubber to the road. Look both sides before you cross the street, and we'll see you next week. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your designated driver, Steve Carbelli. And today we're talking about drones, misinformation, information. And I want to bring up one more point about the information, misinformation thing. If you consider the fact on our judicial system in this country that judges and juries decide the truth, lawyers on each side present a version of the facts or a version of the situation that developed, and we leave it to judges and juries to decide. Does that mean that one side is purveying misinformation and the other side is purveying true information? No. It's basically a viewpoint of the facts and the relativism of how we view facts. So misinformation in that sense is just a construct. It's a bogeyman that just does not exist. Our judicial system, our thought processes have analysis to undergo and how we view and take in data and how we take in information. So again, the drone situation is just endemic to the general problem of misinformation and information. We'll have to wait and see on how this is going to kind of play out a little bit. I'm sure it's one of the 9 reasons or the 8 reasons that I gave you earlier that this is. You know, hopefully it's one of the friendlier reasons than the non-friendly reasons, but it goes to show that a lot of issues that we face today all get categorized into the information cesspool, as we should say, and some of it gets into the misinformation cesspool that is even deeper and darker than the regular cesspool. And we have to figure out, you know, where do we stand as thought process people, sentient people who are able to make decisions and be able to logically go through arguments on our own. Juries and judges do this every day. The judicial system has a mechanism to view viewpoints and determine the truth or the veracity of the people who are speaking in the courts. We have to mirror that. We have to understand that we have the same ability and processes that the judges and juries do. And somehow I think that is forgotten. It is missed. It is glossed over. And it is becoming a more of a epidemic in society today that we have to address. Now, it's interesting that it's social media and influencers seem to have this ability to talk about the virtues or non-virtues of misinformation and those who purvey and carry misinformation as being non-virtuous and evil in this country. So it goes back to the idea of social media being somehow as an enabler for people who want to talk about and divide the information categories. And this is something that I've gone about before in the show. The undue influence of social media, the oversized influence of social media, and how it impacts our daily life. Now, I want to shift focus a little bit about the CEO who was shot, the United Healthcare CEO who was shot in New York recently. Emerson College did a poll recently and found that 24% of the people aged 18 to 29 in their poll found that the actions of the alleged shooter who shot and killed the CEO was somewhat acceptable, and that is in quotes. And 17% of the group found it completely acceptable. And as what's more interesting is that that trend carried over to both political parties. 22% were Democrats, 16% were independents, and 12% were Republicans who found that killing acceptable in that age group. That is the age group of 18 to 29. And it's funny that the Emerson College poll, the director of the Emerson College poll, said, quote, the said findings underscored the shifting societal attitudes among the young electorate and within party lines, unquote. I think that is probably the biggest understatement of the day. And it's probably an understatement because what that poll suggests is something a little more than that. You have to remember, this CEO is not a head of state. He does not command armies. He does not command instruments of war or institutions of repression. He does not, facilitate oppression and misery in a population. He is a CEO of one healthcare company who pretty much is governed by a board of directors. The CEO does have power, but he has governed under a board of directors. And his, quote, electorate or his population that he controls are mainly the subscribers of his company. And what's even more interesting is that the person who was charged with this murder was not even covered under his healthcare company. It is basically a situation in which the CEO of a healthcare company is somehow elevated to a position of the head health person of the world, in which people feel justified to take out their frustrations and take out their ideas of oppressed people under the healthcare system. This is a trend that has been widely accentuated under the pandemic. It is one, a misplaced justification and its absence of consequences for actions. You know, this is not a Hitler type person who is a CEO. He is not a leader of a repressed people. He is not a leader of a country, but somehow killing him seems justified to a segment of our population. It is kind of disconcerting that we think that our shifting attitudes and shifting beliefs, as this director of this Emerson poll has stated, has come to this point. It is basically a shifting of the moral compass. And as you know, as the North Pole seems to gravitate more towards Russia every day, our moral compass seems to more shift towards indecision, justification, unjust justification, and lack of parameters and guardrails in our daily actions. It is probably one of the most disconcerting ideas that I have probably proposed on this show. So when we come back, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to get a dive more deeply into this, see where we stand on this, see if we believe in this Emerson poll, but what the ramifications of this Emerson poll means to us as a society, means us as a American people, and means us as a moral people. We'll be right back after these messages. I'm a rocket man, burning out of fuse. Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm Steve Carbelli, your designated driver. And yes, we did go a little long today because I got on my soapbox and made it a bigger soapbox. So we're going to see you next week on Street and Curb. Remember, keep the wheels and the rubber to the road. Look both sides before you cross the street, and we'll see you next week here on Street and Curb.